The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
Friday in Sin City, and you are watching the weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined by my colleague and cackling whore, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
I'm almost starting with Otis Redding today, which actually would be a classy way to open this show. You can start betting the NBA today. Is that a present for you or a lump of coal in your Christmas stocking? We're going to talk about how taxing it can be to be a successful sports bettor. And a little bit of a wardrobe announcement today. We're going to wear our Sunday best on Saturday night this week.
Well, let's start with a first take, Dave. And last night, relatively light night on the hardwood, certainly. One NFL game wasn't very interesting. You got to have something to share with the listeners of what you saw or what you did on a Thursday. Anything?
How about just a little bit of a gripe? Most things that are done in life are done by people who do it regularly. When you go out to a restaurant, it's a cook. You expect them to cook better than you do because that's what they do. If you're going to read a book from a great author, you want it to be good because they're better than you. But delivery people have become a bit of a nuisance this week. Same thing has happened twice. And if it's happened to you out there too, we'd almost like to hear it about a little bit. Twice in 1 week, large packages placed in front of a door that opens to the outside, clearly identifiable as opening to the outside, and packages placed right where the door would open, so that you can't open the door, and the only way to get to it is to go out the other door, walk all the way around your house and get the package. Not a bad thing, you know, kind of trivial. We laugh it off, it's not so bad. But two things. One is, if you're a delivery person, unless you're out to get someone, shouldn't you know better? Number two is, and I thought about this a little bit later, what if my kitchen caught on fire and I couldn't get out the back door and I had to use that front door? Yeah, that's a little dark, but it just goes back to that idea. If you're a delivery person, shouldn't you know just a little bit better to put it where someone can actually open the door to get to it? By the way, the packages that we did get, none of them from viewers, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later in today's email segment. Teddy, a week counting down to the first Christmas for Isaac. What are you bringing in here on a Friday morning?
Well, the first thing I'm bringing in here, Dave, is laughing at you because people send you presents and you find a way to bitch about it. You know, the guy's getting big, not just crummy presents that'll fit under the door, big, thick presents, you know, that'll block your front door, and Dave finds a way to complain about it. Somebody send me presents, I'm happy. I don't care if it's blocking my door. Good stuff. Thanks for the present. My first take on a Friday has to do with these NFL Network Thursday night games, and I know that the NFL Network is doing their best. They're trying to become relevant. What I don't know is how many people out there actually get the NFL Network at home. Here in Vegas, with DirecTV, you get it. I think it's included in the package. Whatever, I got every sports package anyway, so it doesn't matter. But the NFL Network, you know, they're not ESPN. They're not Fox Sports. They're really, you know, well down on the pecking order of the TV networks. So do you want to build a network? Give us some good games to watch. What have we had the last couple of weeks? Well, we've had Seattle blowing out Philly, the two teams with losing records. We've had that riveting Steelers-Browns game last week that was, 7-3 to the two-minute warning. And then, of course, last night's equally riveting Falcons-Jaguars game that was over by, midway through the second or so. Give us good games. Maybe you'll get some subscribers. And right now, NFL Network stinks. Or maybe the fact is that these NFL players aren't ready to go on Thursdays. You know, not much time to game plan. Maybe switch them to Friday nights. You still get your national TV games at night. Give teams a little bit more time to prepare. But right now, the product they're putting out is kind of stinky. All right, let's start with Market Watch. And as you teased at the top of the show, Dave, we've got lines to talk about in the NBA preseason openers. Here are some numbers for tonight. What do we have? Philly, -2. total 186.5 against the Washington Wizards. The Bulls minus 4, 184.5 the total against the Indiana Pacers. Detroit Pistons laying 5. When's the next time Detroit's going to be laying 5? Not for a while. Total 193 against Cleveland. And the Memphis Grizzlies minus 9, total $1.85 against New Orleans.
We're not ready to do anything with these games except watch and maybe watch closely. And we're optimistic about the NBA this year and that the playing field is extremely level right now. It's going to be a wild scramble. Scramble for the odds makers, scramble in the marketplace. So we're not going to be playing a lot on these preseason games. Yes, we're going to be watching. Remember, the season starts a week from Sunday. It's going to be awfully difficult for any of these teams, even the ones with a lot of veteran holdovers, to be ready. Think about a team like the Dallas Mavericks. They won the championship last year. Veteran team. No, about half of that roster is going to be turned over. So we're going to be watching very, very closely. If we can find a snippet, if we find a coach who says, yeah, it's partially I want to bring my team along, but I want to win. Yeah, I want that confidence level. I want to grab a win before the games count. We will pass that along to you. For today, we've got nothing beforehand. But yeah, tonight, when these results come in, we're going to be charting much more closely than we usually would for the NBA preseason.
I'm with you in terms of optimism about this NBA season, Dave, particularly right from the get-go. I'm certain that the odds makers are going to be behind the curve. I'm certain that the betting markets are going to be behind the curve. And if you're paying attention, the first month, 6 weeks of this NBA season, there's going to be money to be made, and I think there's going to be a lot of money to be made. I'm really looking forward to the start of this NBA campaign. That being said, preseason betting, whether it's NFL, whether it's NBA, whether it's Major League Baseball, the concept is relatively similar. You're not betting opinions in the preseason. You're certainly not going to bet profitably if you're betting opinions. Oh, this team's better than that team. Doesn't matter. Preseason betting is about information, and it's about coaching philosophy. And when you find those little tidbits of information, as Dave was referring, hey, this coach wants to win a game. Hey, this coach is more interested in seeing what he has at the end of his bench. When you find those tidbits, you can really take advantage. But the concept, again, you don't care about how good they're going to be in the regular season. Doesn't matter. What matters is the preparation level and the mentality for this particular ballgame. For tonight's games, I got nothing. But yeah, I'm with you, Dave. I'll be tracking, I'll be watching, and I'll be looking forward to what should be an excellent start to the season. Just, 8, 9 days away right now.
Part of course, what we'll be looking for are rosters and rotations. Because at this point, usually late October, we've got everything down pat in the NBA. We don't have one team yet that we're comfortable that we know what the entire roster and the entire rotation is going to be. So we're going to let them tell that back to us the next couple of days. Also going to be a lot more free agent signings, though, between now and opening day. So again, not much money that can be made today, but I think there's a lot we can learn as those box scores come in tonight.
And we're learning new stuff every day, like how good email writers you are, or how good of an email writer or a forum poster you are. Please keep those emails coming. This is your show, and we're going to respond to as many questions as we can on a daily basis. The email address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. Man, the followers go up every day. Dave, let's see if we can get some more today. And of course, get involved in the Covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now, Covers.com/postingforum.
When we come back, we're going to go to that mailbox, which is filled with awfully good questions and is very, very light on Christmas gift certificates for the Sports Day hosts. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
All right, let's open up the mailbag for Friday, and I'm going to start with a question from Kirk, who says, I've just taken up handicapping as my sole profession over the last 2 months after dabbling it for over 23 years. Unfortunately, I don't live in Vegas. If I start winning from these offshore books, How can I declare my winnings so as not to ever run into problems with the IRS, especially since knowing online gambling hasn't been legalized in the U.S. just yet? Great question, Kirk. Dave?
Great question. We're going to give you lousy answers. Go talk to your attorney. And here's the problem. If we talk to 10 attorneys, we get 10 different answers. The problem is there's just not enough precedent on this. We've got a lot of precedent from people in this industry who've made money wagering in their lives, filed, paid their taxes accordingly. But we don't have a lot of these people who are betting offshore. Remember, we're talking about a phenomenon that's only been around for a little over a dozen years right now. It is gray from state to state. If you live in Nevada, because you lamented the fact that you don't live here, if you did live here, under Nevada state law, it is illegal to place a bet that crosses the state line heading in any direction. So how do you play around that? What we suggest is do your best to pay your taxes, because boy, there's a lot of gray and ugly stuff out there. Something very few of you have done, and I've had to do it as part of a research project with some other people, go through all of the amendments to Homeland Security, or what they would call the Patriot Act, that refer to the gambling industry, and it's staggering the amount that has been written there. You don't want to get caught up in those ringers, because that's not a terribly level playing field. Things like Operation Green Quest, at least that doesn't exist anymore. You probably never heard about it. At one time it did exist. So there are some dark little passages in that hallway. The best thing to do is get an attorney in your jurisdiction, work with him, and try to be proactive up front. Say, look, I'm trying to be honest. I'm trying to help. I'm not trying to violate anything. You guys tell me the right thing to do. Just kind of put the impetus on them. Tell me the right thing to do, and I will do it.
Yeah, there is a nationally recognized attorney called Ina, and by the name of I. Nelson Rose, who's written a lot about the issues with offshore gaming. I would certainly encourage you, I. Nelson Rose is the name. I'd encourage you to maybe do a Google search for him, and you can find some stuff that he has written. But remember, the IRS is not, yeah, they're both in the government, but they're not in bed with the Department of Justice. When you look at how, you know, DOJ couldn't prosecute Al Capone, the IRS found a way to do it. These are not agencies within an enormous federal bureaucracy that are sharing information from one to another. So you can declare, in theory, your gambling winnings without worrying about that information being passed along to another federal agency. Just pay your taxes. And of course, you can. One of the good things, one of the best things about federal law in this area is that you can write off any losses for your winnings. So gambling, you know, you take sum total of all of your losing wages for the year and all your winning wages of the year, and all you have to do is pay taxes on the net, not the gross, which makes an enormous difference between the two.
Part of the problem you're going to run into, though, is unfortunately, if you have a losing year, can't carry it over and file against that the following year. One thing we do have to go back on, though, and here's this problem of Homeland Security and the Patriot Act. What Teddy said was absolutely right at one time about the IRS and justice being separate. No, go back and look at those amendments. And we're talking about hundreds just for the casino and gaming industry itself. Amendments being added as late as last year. Again, it's scary because most people aren't going to look at it. They're not going to see it. But they are connected out there now, unfortunately. There's a broad blanket. So what Homeland Security did is it gave this broad scope and a lot of discretion to the federal government, which can be opposite to fight against if you get caught on the wrong side of it. So we would just be proactive. Go to them first and say, look, here's what I do. I want to pay my taxes. You tell me the right way to do it. That way, if something goes wrong, they're your own partner in that. You've got a little bit of a defense built in. Now we move on to a letter from Jeff. And he says, hey, guys, first and foremost, I have to tell you what an awesome job you're doing with your show. And I hope it stays around for a very long time. We really do appreciate that.
Yay!
No gift certificate, but... Secondly, I was wondering if you guys knew about any good books I could buy to help me with my handicapping process in all the major sports. I bought John Patrick's Sports Handicapping from his So You Want to Be a Gambler series, but it's a little outdated. And I was wondering if there is a more modern book on the art of professional sports handicapping. And finally, I know you guys have a lot to cover on the show with bowl season about to start, NBA basketball about to get underway. And I knew this was coming for a long time. Here it comes. Here it comes. But since I am Canadian, I have to ask, now he does this part in caps, where's all the hockey talk? Once again, great work, guys. I hope this show is here to stay.
Hockey talk. I don't think I could. How many teams are there in the NHL? I don't think I could name them all.
Got to be at least two.
That's
so they could have a game.
Yeah. The bottom line with Hockey Talk is I'm sorry. I'm not a qualified hockey handicapper. I don't try to handicap hockey. I don't think Dave does either. So it makes it a little bit difficult to have intelligent commentary, just like you're not going to hear me try to break down tennis matches or auto racing or other type of stuff. We like to focus on the sports that we've been able to beat in the past and are able to beat in the present, sports where we can give you quality information without is that really good information? And unfortunately, I can't do that in hockey, so you'll have to find another show for your best hockey analysis. We just can't do it. When it comes to sports betting books, the bottom line is there's some good stuff out there. King Yao's, Weighing the Odds. Again, King Yao, Weighing the Odds. Stanford Wong, Sharp Sports Betting, is a solid book. Kevin O'Neill wrote two or three really good books in the late 90s and early 2000s. The book Conquering Risk by Elihu Feistel, Attacking Vegas and Wall Street. That's another really good book on the concepts. But with all of these books, the bottom line is they get outdated, and they get outdated very, very quickly. When we talk about the modern sports betting marketplace, it's different now than it was last year. It's different now than it was 2 years ago. It's way different now than it was 5 years ago. And if we try to talk about the concepts that were working for me when I first moved to Vegas in 1998 versus what's going on right now, it's a completely different ballgame. So, you know, I've been going to write a book, the last 8 summers in a row. I just haven't had the time. Maybe someday I'll sit down and write it, but hasn't happened yet. And I would take the over on when I'm actually going to find the time to get it done. But the bottom line is, if you watch this show every day, frankly, you're going to get better information than you will out of any book. And you're going to get information that's valid in 2011 and 2012. So that's what I'd recommend. Take your time and watch us.
Yeah, and understand what we're saying when we say that watching this show is better. That's not being arrogant or downplaying the books. Just if we had to sit down, Teddy and I had to sit down and write a book today on sports betting, the over-under for it being relevant, irrelevant, probably 2015, 2016.
I'll take under.
Yeah, maybe like a 4 or 5 year shelf life. And that part of it is the book puts itself out of date. The minute you put ideas out there that have a current advantage in the marketplace and people read it, there goes your advantage because people will act upon the book. They'll take those ideas to the betting windows. The odds get adjusted. First thing the odds makers are going to do is if they see a new book come out, they're going to take a look at it themselves. So the shelf lives are so tight. In this show, we can give you these quick edges you can put into play immediately and win while they're still there, but not going to be writing a book anytime soon.
All right, let's do one more question here in the mailbag, and this comes from Poker Shark in the Covers Posting Forum. Love the show, great insights and views. You guys don't have to say you love the show to get your question on here. You can say you hate the show or give us constructive criticism. We'll still talk about it. It's all good. I hope you guys keep doing this for a long time coming, and I can't learn more any other way than watching the show. Anyway, one question I have is last Sunday, the 49ers versus Arizona. San Francisco was laying 3, which seemed too easy for me, but of course, I took the action on it anyway, and sure enough, Arizona won and covered. What was I missing in that game? Why was the line only 3? I feel like everyone I know and in most office pools, everyone was taking the 49ers.
And yet, while everyone was taking the 49ers, that line sort of stayed there, which tells you that someone was taking Arizona. Here's the thing. Look at San Francisco's road games this year. They played 6 of them. 4 of the 6, they were the underdogs. The biggest line they've laid on the road this year was just a 4. They won 4 of the 6 road games, all of the wins in single digits. That line was where it's supposed to be. Again, keep in mind that despite the fact that San Francisco has won a lot of games, they're a grinder. They win close games. They're not a dominating team. They're not going to get easy wins in a hostile environment. It's playing solid, fundamental football that's getting the 49ers where they are. It's not the ability to physically line up and dominate opponents. So if you go back and look at films of that game, you don't necessarily know that one team is better than the other. The San Francisco talent is good. It's the execution level that's taken them so far. But that execution level is never going to make you a very big road favorite.
Yeah, and also the one other thing you want to remember about that ball game is that San Francisco couldn't score touchdowns in the red zone. You know, they had all those opportunities in the first half to really put the pedal to the metal, take control of the game, and they settled for field goals. So it was simply a single result. The Niners didn't play their best game. Of course, they were coming off a win in which they clinched their division and then laying points on the road, which is always a little bit of a red flag. But you can't say that Arizona was a direct right side winner. It was a coin flip kind of a ball game. San Fran ended up on the wrong side of that coin flip. Don't be distressed. Just another loss. You're going to have plenty of them. But I hope you didn't load up on the contest. It certainly wasn't a right side.
When we come back, Teddy still wants hard liquor instead of eggnog. But whatever your preference is, the Insider Six Pack will take care of it.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, guys, let's crack it open. Pop the top on our Insider Six-Pack for Friday. Let's start with the St. John's Red Storm. They're hitting the board for the first time since final exams. They'll be doing so without their starting guard, Nurdine Lindsey, who was averaging 11.8 points per game. Lindsey has finished the semester academically, but he's going to transfer out to another school. Now, that leaves the Red Storm with only 6 scholarship players right now until Amir Garrett becomes eligible when the next semester begins. That could be a difficult rotation to work around during the long grind of that Big East schedule.
Romeo Cornell begins his 3-game audition to possibly become the full-time Kansas City head coach. Sort of awkward timing for him. The Packers are coming to town. Makes you wonder, if you're Kansas City and you know you're going to fire Haley, don't you make him hang around for one more loss? why throw this at Cornell? Anyway, here are the changes Cornell is making. Kyle Orton finally healthy enough to be a starting quarterback for the Chiefs on Sunday. But note, if anything happens to that finger and he can't go, it's not Tyler Palco anymore. Ricky Stanzi is now number 2 in that quarterback depth chart. Tyler Palco right now, he's all the way down to number 3. We're not likely to ever see him again.
Ever see Tyler Palco again. We're going to see the return of Adrian Peterson to the Minnesota Vikings backfield this week. But making the line adjustments a little bit tricky here. Minnesota just lost back-to-back games, but the offense wasn't the problem. They scored 60 points, gained over 900 total yards in those 2 games. Production's not the issue, and AP's absence, frankly, wasn't really felt all that much. The culprit, of course, is a defense that has to start 9 different groups in the secondary already this year. They've lost 4 cornerbacks and 3 safeties since the beginning of October, all on injured reserve right now. So this is a team that has allowed 20 touchdown passes since their last interception. Ooh, that's an ugly little stat. And guess what? It's not DB as in Drew Brees. Drew Brees is in. DBs is in defensive backs. But guess what? Now they got to face him. And Drew Brees, yeah, he's in pretty good form. And, oh, they're not on grass this week. The Saints playing on their preferred turf surface.
Books have been very hesitant to post the line on Miami-Buffalo this week. Matt Moore, the Miami quarterback, suffered a concussion last Sunday. He has passed medical clearance, so could be available to play, but they haven't established who the number 1 is going to be, if they're going to put Moore out there with kind of a banged-up offensive line or go to J.P. Losman. Losman, of course, a former first-round draft pick by the Buffalo Bills, now returning to the team that released him. A lot of times on the show, we'll give you quotes that we think are informative or educational. Got to give you this one from Losman because we just don't get it. So let's see if you can figure this out and bring it back to us. And then tell us, is this the type of guy you would like as your starting quarterback? Quoting Losman for this week, here is the opportunity where it might be the case, who knows, and it would be great to. It's my first start since I left there in the NFL. To be against them is pretty ironic, but that just seems like what it might be. I don't have a clue. I mean, I picture somebody with a surfboard under his arm, on that. I have no idea what that actually means. Something you do need to follow, though. When a team like Miami heads north this time of year, weather could be extra important. You know what it's like in South Florida. Temperature for Buffalo, going to be in the 20s at kickoff. Wind chill might even get into the upper teens. Not exactly the type of weather the Dolphins would be looking forward to.
Wade Phillips has been a topic of discussion for us on this show on many occasions already in recent weeks. And as the Houston defense tries to finish out the season as the number 1 ranked defense in the NFL, they're going to be without Wade Phillips this weekend. They're going to miss in fact, Phillips is expected to miss the next two games after undergoing successful kidney and gallbladder surgery earlier in the week. Replacing him at defense coordinator is going to be Reggie Herring. And note that while Herring has worked under Phillips for several seasons, this is his first go-round with the Houston Texans.
Detroit gets a boy named Sue back in their defensive front this week. That's going to help a little bit. But as we had mentioned earlier, those issues that, you know, Minnesota was able to move well offensively last week against Detroit, not so much good Viking offense, very bad Detroit defense, and there's a chance that lineup could be very depleted again this week. Right now, it looks like safety, Louis Delmas, cornerback, Aaron Berry, linebacker, Justin Durant, defensive tackle, Nick Fairley, all of them have missed practice each of the last 2 days, making them doubtful for Sunday. But that's not all. You've also got Chris Houston, a cornerback, listed as a question mark. In the five games since the bye week, this defense has given up 31.6 points per game, actually the worst in the NFL over that span. So for all the talk about undisciplined play, it's the fact that they simply haven't been very good either. The one upside they do get with McFadden and Ford out for Oakland this week, Oakland doesn't have the full complement of players in the skill positions to take advantage.
When we come back, we head to the Saturday NCAA Hoops Hardwoods for our first Money Time segment.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
All right, guys, this is what you've been waiting for. I know it. You know it. We all know it. It's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start in the NCAA hardwoods for tomorrow. Look-ahead lines telling us that the Texas Longhorns about -4.5 against the Temple Owls for Saturday, TV action. Temple, Texas. What do you got for us, Dave?
Something we put in our pocket here. We've talked about Texas a few times on this show already. Longhorns open 1-4 against the spread, overvalued in the marketplace. Again, so many times programs at that level, they use the phrase, we don't rebuild, we reload. I think this year Texas is rebuilding. They lost more freshmen to the NBA last year than Rick Barnes was counting on. So it's not the usual group of Texas players out there. He had to patch together his roster at the end, brought in a couple of kids that ordinarily wouldn't be in a Texas uniform. Not only have they been slow out of the gate, but the schedule hasn't allowed for a lot of development. I'm not sure they played a single game yet against a team that'll be in the NCAA tournament. Since the last time they were on the board, 3 home blowouts against very weak competition. Their biggest enemy right now, some team that's going to play smart and slow and turn it into a grinder, that's just what Temple does.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, we talk about how Texas not having faced anyone so far this season. Temple's faced Purdue, they faced Wichita State, they faced Villanova. All three of those teams better than anyone the Longhorns have seen so far in 2011. And this is a Temple team that has that veteran presence in the backcourt that we love. Again, teams with the experience, with the depth, with the solid guard play tend to be your better road bets, particularly in this underdog role. Senior Juan Fernandez, 12.5 points and 5.4 assists per game. We have the senior Ramon Moore with 18.4 points per game, 3.5 assists. You got the junior Khalif Wyatt, 14.5 points per game, 3.7 rebounds. That's a veteran perimeter trio that can handle the ball well and handle adversity in a hostile environment.
So here's what we can smell for this one. Not only Temple being in the game, but because of those veterans, and this is a hard group. Remember, Temple went pretty far in the NCAA tournament last year, losing a tough overtime game when they were finally knocked out. It's not just look at taking the points here, but if this guy line gets up to 5 or so, get a nice return on the money line, Let's take a piece of Temple to win this game outright. If it's close late, and we think it will be, very good chance Temple can make the right kind of plays to get over the hump. Also, not nearly the same environment in Austin. Final exams are over now. Holidays are coming up. Student section this Saturday, nowhere near as hostile as it would be at another time. We're going to take a little bit of Temple on the money line for the outright win.
Speaking of student sections that aren't likely to be quite as hostile as they normally are, let's go to the Key Arena in Seattle, where Gonzaga is not playing in their usual venue. They're playing a good ways away from home, laying 4 points approximately to Arizona. Quick turnaround for the Zags off of the win against Oral Roberts yesterday. And frankly, it didn't look all that impressive against Oral Roberts last night. Dave, is this a harbinger of things to come, perhaps, for these Zags?
Do we smell another upset? I think we do here. This game is being priced like there's a bit of a court advantage for Gonzaga. I don't think there is. You know, Spokane is a long way from Seattle. Second, you know, Gonzaga is a small Jesuit school. It's not like they've got all these alums in the Washington area. So you're not going to see that huge of a crowd, not that big of a disadvantage, you know, for Arizona, because Arizona's already been in some tough places. They had to play St. John's in Madison Square Garden, which is sort of like a home game for St. John's. Had to play New Mexico State in Las Cruces, won that game outright. Had to play Florida in Gainesville, took that one to overtime. So they've held up well in some hostile environments already. They got to Seattle before Gonzaga did, able to settle in a little bit easier. So yeah, this line is a little bit high. Arizona has shown that road ability. Another game where I think you put the underdog in there plus the points, and a good chance that underdog could win it outright.
Yeah, this doesn't look like a vintage Zags team. When we look at what's happened so far this season, the front court's been solid. The back court really hasn't been very good, and the defensive intensity has been particularly problematic. They're allowing more than 38% shooting for the season from three-point range. And guess what? In losses to Illinois and Michigan State, neither of whom is a really dynamic offensive team, both of those squads shot better than 50% from the floor against the Zags. Meanwhile, here's an Arizona team, and again, it's early in what was supposed to be, I don't know, a rebuilding season, but certainly when you lose a number two overall draft choice to the NFL, or to the NBA, I should say, there's going to be some holes to fill for that Wildcats roster. I have to be really impressed with what Sean Miller has done with this team already. On the defensive side of the court, the last four games, they've allowed 91 out of 244 shooting. That's 37% allowed. And that includes the trips to Florida and New Mexico State.
Let's go to the United Center in Chicago. Our local Running Rebels taking on Illinois. Illinois, a one-point favorite. They are building some court in for Illinois here, and they should. Illinois does have a big fan base in the Chicago area, so they'll draw well. Here's a case where it almost is smarter for Illinois to play in Chicago than on campus in Champaign, because a lot of their students are actually in Chicago now on break anyway, so they'll draw pretty well. But still not quite the same environment because they haven't played in this arena nearly as much. Rebels certainly going to bring a focus. Go back to last March, flat out embarrassed in that opening round NCAA tournament loss to Illinois. Final score 73-62, nowhere near that close. I think they trailed by as many as 24, 25 points in the first half, never really in the hunt. Revenge and different matchups. The key to Illinois winning that game, look at Mike Davis, Dimitri McKamey. They combined for 39 points, 12 assists, 12 rebounds. They're not there anymore. It's a different Illinois team. I think it's a struggling Illinois team. They've got wins over Gonzaga and Maryland under their belt that look so much better than they should, because I don't think Maryland or Gonzaga are all that right now.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you 100% on that one, Dave. When we look at this Rebels team, you talk about the focus they're going to have for the NCAA tournament revenge from last year. It's more than that. UNLV, since knocking off the number one team in the nation when they beat North Carolina, they're on an 0-for ATS run. In fact, 0-4. They did cover one number in double overtime. What was that? At Santa Clara. But the bad loss at Wichita State, the bad loss at Wisconsin. Wichita State was a flat game. Wisconsin played unbelievable defense in that first half, and UNLV was kind of out of it by halftime. And they came home and knocked off UTEP, but never really sniffed a point spread cover in that game. So here's a Rebels team. The market was white hot on the Rebels early in the year. It was very difficult to find a good point spread to get involved in UNLV games. Well, after their current run, we've seen the market cool off on UNLV a little bit, and that gives the Running Rebels the type of value that I like to see because, frankly, I think they're the better of these two teams.
So here's where we can go with this one, and it's one of the things that we get by following sports very closely, not just looking at box scores, but watching a lot of games. We can identify in baseball season when a batter might not have been bad in an 0-for-4 night because he had a lot of tough pitches to hit. Here's what we've seen in UNLV on the road. We saw Wichita State play awfully well. We saw Wisconsin play awfully well. We saw Cal Santa Barbara play awfully well. It wasn't that the Rebels were that bad. They ran into teams that were on top of their games that day. So what can we do with it? It's Saturday play of the daytime in college basketball. Yeah, our local UNLV running Rebels, we'll take that point in Illinois. Might even see a +1.5 coming up later in the day. But look for the Rebels to get that revenge over an Illinois team that is extremely vulnerable right now. Again, those early wins over Gonzaga and Maryland, we don't think they mean that much. The local Rebels are college play of the day.
Revenge! Revenge! Yeah! UNLV gets their revenge. And we're going to get, I don't know, we're going to get NFL money time.
Nice segue.
College.
Nice
segue. Oh, I botched the whole thing.
Nice segue.
What am I going to do? We'll be right back.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name of my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
It's a Money Time NFL edition, and let's start on Saturday night in Tampa Bay, where the Dallas Cowboys, whose defense we ripped apart on this show yesterday, laying 6.5 on the road, total of 47 against the struggling Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
For as bad as the Dallas defense has been, and they've certainly been awful the last couple of games, sort of overshadowed some good things that have been going on. Tony Romo, last two games, 49 out of 73, 620 yards, 5 touchdown passes, no interceptions. Felix Jones, who's got to play a bigger role now with Marco Murray hurt, 16 carries, 106 yards. He's healthy again. Miles Austin, he's back again. This has a chance to be a very dynamic offense right now with all hands on deck except for Murray. And they can attack a defense that has just been dismal since losing Gerald McCoy, a guy Tampa Bay could not afford to replace. We also talked about the Tampa struggles on the show earlier in the week. Think about it now. If you watched the game last night and saw how bad Jacksonville was, Jacksonville went on a 41-0 run against Tampa last Sunday. Bucs are struggling.
Oh, struggling is putting it mildly. And you look at Tampa's quote-unquote home field advantage. Well, their home field advantage has seen them lose their last two home games 75-28 against Carolina and Houston. No, the Bucs aren't playing good football here, not by any stretch of the imagination. And Dallas has been close. Remember, you know, 5 of their 6 losses have come by 4 or less in regulation. They're just a bounce away from being a dominant team with a dominant record and laying 13 on the road in this game, or 10.5, or 9.5, or more than 6.5 anyway. And this number likely to go up between now and kickoff. If you do like the Cowboys, this is not one you want to wait on. You probably want to get to Dallas before it hits the key number of 7.
In fact, we can even give you a little tip. We can save you about 7 or 8 minutes while you're watching the show. If you got the ability to isolate a browser window, you click your account on another, go ahead and bet Dallas now. Let's go to Philadelphia. Nice matchup on Sunday. If teams have been a little disappointing to this stage, the Eagles, -2.5 total, hovering around 44.5. Last week on the show, we talked about Andy Reid and how good his late season numbers have been. But question, did that necessarily matter anymore? Did his team still have the will to compete, to play for a coach who's done a good job at making tactical adjustments as the season went on? Well, that was a good performance by Philadelphia at Miami last Sunday. Considering how well Miami had been playing up to that moment, that looks like something that maybe they can build off of. Maybe Philly this week plays just as hard with a losing record as if they were in playoff contention.
And maybe the single best thing about that Eagles win last Sunday was the fact that they fell behind in that ballgame. They had a punt blocked early. They gave up a long touchdown on 3rd and long. And they were down 7-0. And I had a ticket on Miami. Obviously a wrong side loser in that ballgame. But I had a ticket on Miami. And when the Dolphins took that 7-0 lead, I'm like, this game's over already. Obviously, it wasn't. Not even close. But you had that feel where Philadelphia, you know, they took a punch. And they punched back, which is something the Eagles were not able to do early in the season. But you talk about Andy Reid's late season success. Let's give Rex Ryan some credit, too. Because this Jets team, in every year that Ryan's been there, they've played their best football in December and January. And maybe we're seeing signs of that now, but let's also not forget the Jets 0-4 straight up this year against teams likely to make the playoffs. They haven't faced a particularly brutal schedule, and when they have had to step up against quality foes, if Philly's a quality foe, but when they've had to step up against quality foes, the Jets have consistently come up short.
So here's the matchup to be looking for in this game. Ryan's defense is good when it can be a bullying type of defense. Sort of fits the personality of the coach. But like a lot of bullies, they don't like to take a punch. They don't like to be attacked. You'll see sometimes, Tom Brady's had some dynamite games, getting that defense back on their heels. When the Eagles are healthy on offense, and they are now, they can put a defense back on their heels. You have playmakers at a lot of different positions. This is one team I don't think the Jets are going to be that comfortable matching up against on defense. Don't be surprised if Philly continues that late season surge.
So let's go to Denver right now, where the money's just pouring in on New England. I mean, it's been a nonstop truckload of money. Wise guys, squares, everyone loading up on the Patriots this Sunday. Totals now, the Patriots all the way up to 7.5. This game opened as low as 4.5 in some places. Total 46. And I understand, you look at who Denver has beaten throughout the course of this winning streak. What do we have? We had the win over struggling. A struggling Bears team last week. They had a win over a struggling Vikings team the week before that. They had a win over the Chargers the week before that, a San Diego team that at the time had lost 6 in a row. They had a win over the Jets that the Jets really weren't prepared for that Thursday night game. They had the win over KC. KC's no good. They had the win over Oakland. The Raiders have been pretty much a disaster area. This winning streak, impressive, no question. 6 in a row is impressive at any level. But certainly, every team that Denver has beaten during this span has had some fundamental flaw that has allowed the Broncos to hang around and then steal one in the fourth quarter, just like they did last week, thanks to Marion Barber.
So should that bother some of us who want to play Denver this week? Actually, it shouldn't, because a lot of what Teddy just talked about, we can say about New England as well. And here's the rarity here. You've got a team laying more than a touchdown. Week 14 on the schedule, that is dead last in the NFL, in yards allowed, in first downs allowed, dead last in total offense, so many different categories, yards per play. Patriots are dead last. And we think, well, that looks pretty bad. But now take it a step further. Let's look at the last four quarterbacks the Patriots have faced. Dan Orlovsky, Tyler Palko, Vince Young, and Rex Grossman. Will any of those four ever start an NFL game from this season forward? A couple of them certainly won't ever start in the NFL again. So the Patriots defense is playing weak competition and not stopping them anyway. Can a team that plays defense this bad, this late in the year, be laying more than a touchdown on the road?
No. I mean, it's a simple no. There's lots of stuff we say it depends or kind of or maybe. No. New England does not deserve to be laying this type of price on the road. The Denver defense, better versus the run, better versus the pass. They have a better pass rush. They have a better third down defense. They have a better fourth down defense. The Patriots had to use Julian Edelman and Matthew Slater in the secondary last week because they're so short of bodies. If I'm playing this one, you bet I'm playing the Broncos and maybe put a few shekels on Denver on the money line. Considering they've won 6 in a row and they're finding ways to win, think of how crazy the Tebow hype would be next week if the Broncos find a way to win this one.
Let's go to Sunday night in San Diego, and a game that might have its importance ratcheted up a little more based on New England-Denver. Right now we're seeing San Diego, a 2.5-point favorite, total in the 44-44.5 range. Keep in mind that New England is a 7.5-point favorite, is expected to beat Denver straight up. If they do, the Chargers, the dead, downtrodden Bolts, apparently heading nowhere a couple of weeks ago, are right back in the thick of that AFC West race again. Last two games, dynamic wins by a combined 75-24. They played a couple of bad teams, Jacksonville and Buffalo. But when you win back-to-back games in the NFL by more than 50 points, you're doing a lot of things right. That offensive line is stabilized a little bit right now. They didn't get injured players back, but the guys they do have out there, chance to play together, develop some chemistry. Phillip Rivers has his healthy receivers again. Whole different attitude in San Diego right now.
Yeah, and who died and anointed the Ravens as being the class of the AFC? I've been saying it on this show for weeks. The three teams that everyone's saying are the teams to beat in the AFC: Pittsburgh, New England and Baltimore, they're all flawed. They're all flawed in a fundamental way. And we saw it again last week from Baltimore, where they dominate the game, dominate, and yet when all said and done, they didn't cash a ticket for their supporters. They have all the pieces. You look at Baltimore and you say, yeah, this team should be really good. Their defense has been very strong. They may get Ray Lewis back. He's missed the last four games, but he's been practicing this week. Terrell Suggs has been a monster. 13 sacks, 6 forced fumbles. And Suggs, of course, his quote, if we get him back in there, speaking of Ray Lewis, we get the greatest player to ever play the game of football, which is, you know, a bit of hyperbole, but, you know, Suggs having a real good year. Good defense. They run the ball well with Ray Rice. Joe Flacco's got weapons. They've got receivers. And yet you watch them play, and there's always something missing with Baltimore. They don't seem to be able to drive a stake into teams when they're down. You look at what's happened on the road for Baltimore this year. What happened? They lose to Seattle on the road. They lose to Jacksonville on the road. There's another one, another bad loss to a last-place team or a team with a losing record on the highway. And their only win on the highway all year against a team with a winning record came at Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger picked them apart in that game, 330 passing yards against that great Ravens defense. And frankly, that game was a coin flip. You know, it landed tails. Baltimore was able to win at the end. Could have easily landed heads, and the Steelers would have won it by a field goal. Certainly not a Ravens team. It feels to me that the whole of the team is less than the sum of the parts individually. Lots of good players, mediocre results.
Of course, if Terrell Suggs makes a statement, I'm just going to nod and agree with him. You know, yeah, sir. Whatever you say, sir. Yes, sir. So here's what we think. We want you to have plenty of money in your pocket, not just before the San Diego game starts, but how about if we get it in your pocket before the 1 o'clock kickoffs take place on Sunday? A little bit of a bonus week here. Teddy, what's the best of this board, and how quick do we get in play?
We're going to get in play on Saturday night, the Sports Day play of the day. We're going to be on the Dallas Cowboys -6.5. Again, this is one that you probably want to get to the window now. You don't want to lay 7 here. A decent possibility the Cowboys win this game by 7. If they do, you want to be able to cash that ticket, not push it. Take Dallas -6.5. America's team gets the job done in Tampa Bay on Saturday night. And that's going to wrap it up for the weekend preview edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll be back again on Monday.